Hello and welcome to the Geeky Brewery podcast here at Botanical Gardens, Birmingham. Feels a little bit roomier than the usual studio.
Yeah, we've actually left the house.
Yes, we've actually escaped the void that we've been stuck in for the last few years. It's me, your host, Mr. Ryan Parrish. Joining me, Mr. Lee Forrest, Mr. Keith Bloomfield, and Mr. Sam Edwards.
Hello.
And the reason we're here at Botanical Gardens is because we are screening The Boy and the Heron this evening as part of Birmingham Anime Film Festival, along with the lovely people from Flatpak Film Festival, Mockingbird Cinema, Birmingham Botanical Gardens itself, of course, and the amazing Sakine Quartet, who will be giving us a lullaby later, and Digbeth Dining Club, who are doing food. So, if you've not had a chance to read Sam's blog about The Boy and the Heron, Sam, do you want to tell us what The Boy and the Heron is?
In 2013, legendary filmmaker Hayao Miyazaki announced that he would be retiring from filmmaking after the release of his passion project The Wind Rises. He had made such announcements several times before, only to be tempted back by a new story, but this time it looked like he meant it. At 72 years old and with such beloved classics as Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle, having comfortably secured his place in the animation history books, there are few people working in the film industry who have done more to earn a rest. But, incredibly, and fortunately for the rest of us, he came out of retirement yet again to make the beautiful swan song that is The Boy and the Heron. Like many of his films, it follows a young protagonist who is drawn into a fantastical world, much like Miyazaki himself is forever pulled back into his own fantasy worlds. It also pulls together all of his favourite themes from his sumptuous back catalogue: the conflict between man and nature, the divergence of tradition and progress, and the parallels between magic and realism. The titular boy is Mahito, whose mother is killed in a hospital fire during the bombing of Tokyo in World War II, easily one of the most harrowing openings to any Studio Ghibli film. Some years later, when his father finds a new wife, Natsuko, they move to Mahito's new stepmother's family home. Mahito struggles to warm to the pregnant Natsuko and is tempted when a mysterious talking heron offers to help him find his real mother. But when Natsuko goes missing, Mahito and the heron go on a quest to a magical realm to find her. On the journey, they encounter a mob of sinister parakeets, a fire-wielding warrior girl, some adorable fish-loving spirits, and a tired old wizard trying desperately to hold the world together. The ambition is extraordinary, with a huge, sprawling world populated with all sorts of creatures and societies, but Miyazaki never loses track of the intimate, personal, human touches that mark the relationships between Mahito and his family. Despite the magic and wonder, it all feels relatable and sympathetic. And, as you would expect from Studio Ghibli, the hand-drawn animation is utterly beautiful. Whether it's the impressionistic flames of war, the bucolic scenery of Natsuko's rural estate, or the surreal architecture of the magical dimension. If this is Miyazaki's final film, it's a fitting closer to his incredible career. Fending off stiff competition from the Spider-Verse, this film's Oscar win made Miyazaki the oldest ever recipient of the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature at 83 years old, breaking his own previous record from when he won the award at 62 for Spirited Away. But there are already rumours that he's thinking of picking up the pencils again. Will he be tempted, like Mahito, back to the worlds of fantasy that he's made us all fall in love with? Or is he more like the exhausted wizard, hoping someone will step up and carry on his legacy for him? Boy and the Heron is a perfect film to watch in a lovely, picturesque outdoor screening. We had a beautiful one the other week at the Botanical Gardens, but if you missed that, we have another one coming up at the Midlands Arts Centre, that's the MAC, on Saturday the 7th of September at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at baff.uk, that's baff.uk. We hope to see you there.
Yeah, it's quite interesting with Hayao Miyazaki. It seems to be every time Makoto Shinkai releases a movie, he just shakes his fist and decides to get his pens out again and start drawing another film.
It's just that image of him with the cigarette just like head in his hand.
He's like turning into a Scooby-Doo villain of anime. I'll get those kids.
Yeah.
You sort of get the impression he doesn't quite trust anyone enough to take over the Studio Ghibli franchise.
He certainly doesn't seem to trust his son.
I feel sorry for poor Goro because he's made some amazing movies, but he just never seems to get any love.
Yeah,
it's like the tortured son of like the auteur director father, isn't it?
It's pretty big shoes to fill, though, anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
But yeah, so we are screening a wide range of movies for the Birmingham Anime Film Festival. No spoilers, but we have released some on the BAF website, so it's baf.uk. Some really interesting stuff coming up. So we're not just sticking with new releases. We go back into delve into the archives, pull out a few anime films that you haven't seen for a while. But we're doing this in collaboration, of course, with the Mockingbird Cinema. So it's going to be the last weekend of September and the first two weekends of October, from Thursday to Sunday. If you are in Birmingham and you are for a bit of an anime treat, please come down and give us a watch and give us a support. But yeah, how do you think about BAFTA 23 went?
It was great. I mean,
best, I wasn't here, but you know. Yeah. The best it seemed to go okay from what I heard.
It's seeing them on the big screen.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so used to seeing them on TV, and a lot of the kind of, particularly the older anime movies, I just saw on CRT TV screens in off VHS cassettes from when manga was a supplier. So it's nice to see them like properly presented, you know.
Yeah, it seems to be a bit of a massive resurgence of anime in the last few years. I mean, I know there's a big around the late 2000s with the Toonami block, if you remember Toonami, Cartoon Network. And then since Netflix has come around, there's a lot more anime films are coming out now.
Well, and the move in comics as well. From Western comics to manga. There's a lot of comic shops now. Their biggest sellers are manga titles. So
shout out to our friends at Worlds Apart. Yeah. 3 for 2 on manga at all times.
So it means the audience is growing rather than kind of like, you know, shrinking. It's actually, well, you know, one of the big audiences out there really at the moment. So there's a lot of interest in the legacy stuff as well as the more contemporary stuff.
And we were getting big audiences last year at the Anime Festival as well. It's a lot of the bigger films were sold out, and rightly so.
I think we did over 600 for My Neighbor Totoro last year. We beat that Boy in the Heron this year. I think we're nearing 750 plus for this one. So it's going to be a fun screening. But surprise question, favourite anime movie, Lee?
Okay, this is going to be difficult.
You said surprise question, Ryan.
Yeah, you did.
Really are going to need to think about
this. We'll just speed this
up. Do you know what? I think, obviously, because we're on Ghibli, I'm going to go with Castle in the Sky.
Nice.
Just because it was like the first anime movies that I saw. Mm-hmm. And obviously, introduction to Ghibli long before Spirited Away, because I distinctly remember getting it off like a sort of pirated VHS that my mom obtained through someone at work sort of thing. And had no idea about anime before that, and it sort of reopened my own. And it's still a great film to this day, so I really enjoy that film. So.
Yeah, and you two have got no excuse now, so Sam, you go next.
I'm going to stick with Ghibli as well and go with Princess Mononoke. I think it's just got such a lovely, rich mythology to it, and it's the sort of world that you want to kind of read more about afterwards somehow. and really beautiful film, lovely animation. Memorable characters, cute, weird little forest spirits. So, great.
Yeah, and I'm just going to cheat completely because I'm not going to pick one. So, obviously, Ghibli is the kind of head and shoulders above everywhere else.
Yeah.
Although I will go with the fox dub on My Neighbor Totoro, not the fancy pants modern one, which is terrible in comparison. But that would then be tied with The Cat Returns and Howl's Moving Castle, which I love. But I also do quite like Steam Boy, which is an anime film from the kind of mid to early 2000s.
Yep.
Which is kind of cool because it's all rocket packs and steampunk and everything. So
I remember that is Patrick Stewart's in the dub version.
I just wouldn't know the dub version, so never listened to the dub version.
Yeah. Can I throw in an additional one? Because I thought of Your Name, which is a really good film.
Girl Who Jumps Through Time.
Yes.
There's just too many.
So
too
we're
many.
Doing Shinkai and Ghibli, because I was going to pick Shinkai as well. I was going to go with 5 Centimeters Per Second, which is one of my favourite Shinkai movies. It's one of the shorter ones. Yeah. It's three like 20-minute vignettes. Yeah. And three, they're all tied together through length of time and distance.
But this really, is the beauty really of anime in the same way as manga, is that there is a title for everybody.
Yep.
From young children through to kind of adults, because obviously if you were an 80s fan of manga, the first things you've seen is like, you know, Legend of the Overfiend would be the first introduction
Akira,
to manga.
The Gaiva, those kind of really, so, Ninja Scroll, those kind of really hefty movies.
But there's something for everybody, that's the beauty of it as a medium or an art form or a genre. And it's not really a genre, it's an art form, you know, same as any animation really. But manga and particularly Japanese audiences embrace that thing of like, this is a, it's just a film. It's animated, but it's just a film telling a story that we kind of engage with. So I think it's
great. The whole heart of Bath is we want to bring these films to a bigger screen. So as we mentioned, Mockingbird Cinema and Mac Birmingham, the two last independent cinemas remaining in Birmingham. And it's a case of use them or lose them.
Yeah.
So this is an opportunity to come out and see something that you would never have seen before on a big screen. We've been some really picky with our titles this year. Can't really spoil it too much, particularly if you go on the Bath website. And if you have missed the opportunity to see this outdoor screening, we actually have a special second date coming up at the Mac Birmingham on Saturday the 7th of September. So they've got their beautiful outdoor screen as well. So we'll be screening it there as a kind of people who've missed out on the chance for this one.
Lovely.
Awesome. Well, we'll see you shortly and then hope you enjoy the film if you're here. If not, we'll hopefully see you at the festival at some point too. So we're coming to a quietish little corner. We'll manage to squeeze onto a comfy park bench.
Well, it's as cozy as the actual auditorium is now. There's like 700 people.
Yeah, 700 plus space. People are now crawling into the space.
This is quite cool.
So, one geek thing, keep it nice and short. Keith, what have we been up to since we last spoke to you?
Okay, I'm going to go with something that I don't know if many people watch, but I quite enjoy. And it's a TV show that is, I think, on Hulu in the States, but Disney Plus here in the UK. And it's the unloved cousin of Rick and Morty, and it's The Solar Opposites.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically the story of four aliens who get stuck on Earth, and it's their escapades. And since a certain incident with a certain person a couple of years ago, Dan Stevens has now taken over the lead voice acting job, which he did quite well last season, but this season he's been more doing his voice as he wants it.
Dan Stevens, Legion?
Yes. Yeah. He was also the Beast in the live-action Beauty and the Beast, and he was Arthur in the third Night at the Museum movie, or Gawain or something. He was a knight, or anyway.
He's sort of popped up in everything and is usually the best thing.
And he was in some horror movie earlier this year. It was quite good. I mean, yeah, he's just himself. He's like Anthony Hopkins.
He's about to be in the Among Us TV show.
Right, cool.
I know Susanna Reid asked him if he beat off a lot of Americans once when he was casting for Legion.
Oh, now I know who he is.
Yes, he did.
I've seen Ackley.
And it's just silly and funny and full of sci-fi tropes. And there's a great bit where they have two kind of stories inside the main story, which is Silver Cops, which is a guy they jettisoned off into space, and he's now joined this intergalactic space cop agency, and that's a whole story going on in itself. And also the two kid characters in the main film had a wall was just full of shrunken humans, and it was kind of like a Mad Max.
Is it the one they captured, basically?
Yeah, and then
they annoyed them.
They just stick all these people in this wall, shrunken down, and it's had a whole kind of thing, and they've all escaped the wall now and are living in the garden, and there's a whole thing going on with that. And they just have little episodes in amongst the others, and it's just really funny and entertaining, and I quite enjoy it, and I do like watching it. And if you've not caught it, you should, and you had any love for Rick and Morty, you should definitely catch The Solar Opposites on Disney Plus. Brilliant.
Awesome. Sam, how about yourself?
I'm going down a similar line of an animated show that's been on for a while, but I'm only just getting into it, but I've got very into it, which is a kids show called The Dragon Prince, which Netflix has been recommending to me for a while. And I put it on as a sort of, I needed something to have on in the background while I was ironing type program. But having started it, it's really, really, really genuinely very good. It's a sort of fantasy show about a world that's been used to be populated by humans and sort of mythical creatures, but then there's been a big sort of cataclysm that split all the mythical dragons and elves into one side of the land, all the humans on the other side. Dragons and elves and so on use sort of elemental magic, which humans don't have access to, but they've developed what's referred to in the show as dark magic, which is created by basically killing something magical to create your spell, which is obviously not a very nice thing. But it's got incredibly well-written characters. There's a couple of people who are sort of villains, but weirdly likeable.
The main character is voiced by the guy who played Sokka in Last Airbender.
Which version?
Avatar. Yeah, the proper animated one. Yes.
I was going to say, because the animated one, there's the film which we will never speak of. And then there's the Netflix animated live series, which was meh.
Yeah, no, the original proper animated one. And yeah, all the cast are very, very good. And yeah, I've sort of slightly fallen in love with it, binged quite a lot of it over the last couple of days. And it's, yeah, short episodes are very easy to watch and similar sort of sense of humour to Avatar as well. So if you like that, you'd probably like this.
Awesome. Lee, how about yourself?
So I have a game recommendation, mostly because it's a game that I have played for work for a review and did some guides and stuff. But I got a solid 9 out of 10 from me in this review. It's called Cat Quest 3. It is basically the Cat Quest games, the obviously, as you can probably guess, there are two other Cat Quest games. Both of them are kind of like, you know, very silly cartoony action RPGs starring a cat in a medieval world. But the third one is a pirate adventure.
Brilliant.
So Black Flag but with cats.
Yes. It is like a sort of very small open world kind of thing, but it's more like, it's kind of, the best way to describe how it looks is it's almost like a diorama. If you sort of think of like things like Octopath Traveler and that sort of like Square Enix 2D HD thing that they're doing, where it's like you've got 2D sprites, but like everything's kind of layered in a sort of pseudo 3D.
So like those old paper theatres you used to like.
And the way that the world is constructed is as if it actually is like a treasure map and everyone's walking around it. So like, bits of the map are marked with the location and like the border of it is like the actual sort of meters and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, like you play as this little cat pirate and you just sort of sail around in your ship and you're on a quest to find this mythical treasure which holds a secret, and you just sort of encounter like characters along the way, and the world's very open. You can kind of just explore it at your will, and you've got lots of sort of side areas and stuff, and it's just such a good time.
So if you're a fan of Zelda, those kind of games?
Yeah, it's very sort of similar to that. It's obviously got like, you know, real-time combat and stuff. So, but also like there's like a range of weapons you can use. You've got swords, you've got claws, you've got shields. You get like a ranged weapon. So obviously you can have like, you know, sort of like pistol like a pirate would, or you can carry like magic wands and things. So there's bits of magic and stuff. And
is that on all formats? Because I remember playing the first one. I don't know why I didn't play the second one. I quite enjoyed the first Cat Quest.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think that just ended up on literally every platform from mobile to console. Is this one on everything?
I'm not
as well?
Sure if it's on mobile, but it's definitely on all, like it's on PC and all the consoles and stuff.
Cool.
And yeah, like I really enjoyed my time with it. It's just such a fun little adventure, just because like all the dialogue, they just shove as many cat puns in as possible.
as is tradition.
Even like where it like really feels ridiculously forced, like you can get a meow sheen gun, and you're up again, you're fighting against pirates. And it's just such a fun little thing. Like it does not take itself too seriously. It's just a fun little sort of, you know, 10 to 15 hour adventure, depending on how much you're exploring, and just really gorgeous visuals, really fun gameplay, and just really fun dialogue. And I highly recommend everyone goes out and plays it.
You can. How do you make things better? Make them pirates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Classic.
It's got pirates or ninjas. Those are your two options. Yeah. We're all aware. Yeah. You either go ninja or the pirate route. Yeah. Maybe Cat Quest 4 will be ninjas.
Yeah.
Cat ninjas would work quite nicely.
Yeah.
You would? I mean, they are quite silent.
Yeah.
And deadly. So my one geek thing, I am going to pick, not a good geek thing, I'm going to pick the beigest thing I've ever seen in the world.
Okay, surprise.
It's currently in cinemas.
I think I might know where this is going.
Oh, gosh, okay.
It's based on a video game.
Yep, yep.
Directed by Eli Roth.
Yep.
But it's at 12A. Starring Cate Blanchett, Jack Black, Kevin Hart.
On that note, it's, you know, being a 12A, bear in mind that the games are 18.
Yes.
PEGI 18, so.
And went out a decade ago, so anybody who was 18 at the time is probably about 28, 30 now.
Yeah.
It's the beigest thing I've ever seen in my life, which is just, terrible. So basically, you can tell it was made to be an R-rated movie originally, and they've cut out all the violence. Well, there was violence in it, but there's no blood, there's no gore. The bullets just hit people and they fall over. The psychos are just basically like wacky wavable inflatable arm guys just attacking people. You can tell about 90% of the good stuff in the film has been cut. Kevin Hart is miscast because he's playing Roland, but he's playing the straight man. Cate Blanchett's playing a superhero at the age of 60. Well, nothing wrong with that, but Cate Blanchett is not superhero acting style. She just brings her normal acting style to this, and I think she gets pretty miscast. Ariana Greenblatt is good as Tiny Tina. Jamie Lee Curtis doesn't have a clue what is going on. I think she just turned up and went, oh, I'm getting paid for this, so I'm just going to try and enjoy it while I'm here. The villain is awful. Please do not see this. Don't even watch it on streaming. Don't give them any of your money.
Wait for the extended R-rated version that comes to Blu-ray and DVD.
Wait for the director's
cut.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, this is like the general opinion I've been hearing about it is that it's like it's not even good enough to watch as like
It's not even bad good.
It's not entertainingly bad, you know.
Yeah.
But the trailer just bugged me from the start because like I thought, oh, this might be okay. I quite like some of the Borderlands games, but then there's a whole sequence in the trailer where they're flying into the mouth of a monster. They shoot some missiles into the monster. Then the car goes into the monster's mouth.
Yes.
Then there's like several seconds, and then the back of the monster explodes, and the car, traveling at the same velocity, entered the... It's like, that's not how physics works.
No.
If you'd have gone in the mouth, you've stopped.
Yes.
You don't come... But flight. It's like, no, this is
still wrong. Do you know what the problem
is,
Keith? That is the best action scene in the world.
Oh, God,
at this moment.
Thing.
And it is just... You're watching the film, and you're just like... It's just, there's no character development. You have no empathy, no association with the characters. So much plot has obviously been cut out. It's just dull.
What, do they kind of try and emulate the Guardians of the Galaxy vibe?
Basically,
a lot of needle drops and stuff.
Well, even the big monster with the big gopey mouth, that is part of Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
The second part.
Is it 3 or 2? No,
2.
Three.
The beginning of 2, isn't it?
Yeah, beginning of 2.
Yeah, so it's basically just a rip-off of the beginning of 2.
Shocking.
Yeah, all the jokes fall flat. It's boring. The villain's terrible. Just don't go and see it.
Avoid.
Right, we're going to wrap this up now because the string quarter has just started to play and we would like to go and see...
It's very pleasant drifting over while we're sat under some dappled trees, which is very nice.
Yeah, nice overcast August evening here in the Botanical Gardens.
Yes.
Don't forget to check out BAFF.UK for the website for any of the film listings coming up. Zed, if you missed tonight, don't forget September the 7th, we're doing a second outdoor screening at the Mac Birmingham. Thank you very much for joining us. We've been Geeky Rummy. Keith, where can find you online?
You can find me, like everybody should have, is the same name on all social media platforms.
Broken so 6 years worth of tweets.
Hardlock Hotel on everything. Now I've lost my underscore, but it's the same on everything. So it's the same in Threads as it is on Instagram. I don't have to go looking up 44 different names for everybody on every platform when I'm trying to do my...
Talking of different
comic
names,
of the week.
Sam?
I'm nice and awkward. So I'm at SDEdwards89 on Instagram.
One name.
And I'm DragonSam89 on Twitter.
Lee, how about yourself?
You can find me, Bob the Pet Ferret, on YouTube and The Cheap Ferret on Twitter. And you can also find the Cat Quest 3 review that I mentioned. You can find that on Silicon Era, which I write for. As part of my job, and obviously all the usual geeky bro-y places.
Yes, don't forget to check out our Comic of the Week listing every Wednesday.
Wednesdays, yep.
Our Film of the Week listing every Thursday. And our Game of the Listing most Fridays.
Yes.
Don't forget to check out BAFF UK. So that's BAFF_UK on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads. And don't forget to geek out Geeky Bro-y on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, geekybro-y.com. Anywhere that Geeky Brummy, well, the words Geeky and Brummy come together. But we shall see you again soon. Thanks very much. Bye, everybody.
Cheerio, folks.
Bye.
See ya.